Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz underscore radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
Well, I am not alone today. We always have Danny Burke, Pride of Chicago, with us. We also have Mr. Brandon L. Vogel of Hail Varsity, author, Dream Like a Champion, him and John Cook. Brandon Vogel is in studio today. He will not escape. He will not run. He will not hide for the next 2 hours. Busy show. Hope you're doing good on this Wednesday. We have plenty of bribery to keep you around with some giveaways. We'll get to those in a minute. As here is the lineup today on Hail Varsity Radio. Can join us 466-3776, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Can tap the line with Schilling Bridge Cork and Tap House. They let you do that. 15 minutes away, Heisman winner Eric Crouch. Crouch, an all-time legend. It is Legends Night Saturday at Haymarket Park with the Salt Dogs. Get your tickets, get your autograph vouchers. Eric Crouch, Coach Osborne, Johnny Rogers, Michael Heisman, Mike Rozier. That is going on before first pitch for the Salt Dogs. It is ceremonial first pitch with all four legends. So Eric Crouch in 15 minutes. We will talk about his pitching ability and also what he does during the football season, meaning what he thinks of Nebraska football while he's watching them. Wilderness Ridge is coming up. It's the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Shuey going to be in studio in 30 minutes. In 1 hour from now, Brad Edwards, ESPN.com and Magazine, and College Football Insider and Game Day. Brad Edwards with us, and then a Jock Doc for all of you Cleveland baseball fans. You have the numbers on social media. Can get us at Schmidt underscore radio, at Brandon L. Vogel, or at Hail Varsity. Vogues, it's so kind of you to come by, man. You've missed me. I've missed you. How are you?
I'm doing well. You know, it was a game time decision as to whether or not I was going to make it for this day in particular.
That
not
is code for sit with him for 2 hours.
Oh, no, it wasn't me. I put it out there. I like data, and I'm a believer in the wisdom of crowds. So I put it out there on Twitter. Should I co-host?
What kind of crowds are we talking?
Should I co-host with Schmitty or not? The people spoke and they said yes. Except for 34% of them said no. So for those of you that are listening right now, I'm sorry, but I came anyway.
I don't think it's a reflection on you. It's probably to save you from hanging out for again. Short side option. Go against the grain. I like it. Well, it's good to see you. There's a ton to talk about. Coach Riley met the media yesterday. A great practice report from HailVarsity.com. By the way, Derek Peterson, Mike Babcock, Greg Smith, yourself. The online team is just incredible. I mean, the amount of content you guys crank out each day, interesting, articulate, insightful stories, man. That's applause for you guys. It's awesome. And you have practice report. You got the captain still trying to be decided. You have punt return gate, may I call it that. And then, lo and behold, someone else is getting on the Tanner Lee for all-world quarterback. But this guy, I think you and I both say, is probably one of our favorite national writers in college football. When Lars does college football, he's my favorite writer, period, on that national scope. But Bruce Feldman's right there with talent and insight. And, man, he's loving him some Tanner Lee already.
Yeah, he is. He's one of the most well-connected guys in college football. Also a great writer. And that includes both just covering the sport. And he's got some great books out mm-hmm. there, you know, Meat Market, a couple others that I'm forgetting off the top of my head. But kind of came out and said, so the SI – Feldman's now at Sports Illustrated. SI did their crystal ball.
He was with Fox like 3 months ago.
Well, then Fox decided that we're no longer in the written content business. So all those
get
guys
a video and scream.
Saw the writing on the wall, or the writing that wasn't on the website, and decided to get someplace else. So Feldman ended up at SI. They made their crystal ball predictions. They asked for a breakout player in 2017. One player nationally, Tanner Lee was Feldman's pick. Interesting, I guess, although not out of line with kind of what we've been hearing for the past 6 months. So add another coal car to the Tanner Lee hype train.
Here it is. What you have the quote saying is this: a former Tulane starter has everything NFL scouts look for in terms of size, smarts, arm strength, and accuracy. He also has quite a bit of speed to work with at skill positions. Keep an eye on freshman Tyjon Lindsey. With all the preseason hype on Wisconsin, Lee and the Huskers could make things very interesting in the Big Ten West.
Nice Tyjon Lindsey mentioned in there as well. Yeah, who also got some love from Barrett Salee of CBS Sports today, uh-huh, as one of the breakout freshmen in the Big Ten.
So we've talked to Phil Savage. You hear everyone kind of rave about Tanner Lee. We'll talk to Eric Crouch here in about 10 minutes about Tanner Lee and how that first pitch Saturday night, or that opening pitch, will go for him and Coach Osborne and Mike Rozier and Johnny the Jet Rogers. But the thing that we spent some time on last weekend was the pressure side of things. But now let's just get down to it and ask the question about making things interesting. How do you think Nebraska does that? Where do they go to do that? Is it in the run game? Is it with turnovers? Is it with, we'll get to the personnel thing in a second, is it with great field position, so it's 65-yard drives or 50-yard drives versus starting from the 25? I mean, where can Nebraska do it? The obvious answer is have a better quarterback that can win you and keep you in games, but it's going to be more than just him going Brett Favre. Otherwise, it will be 7-5 or worse.
Yeah, it will be. I mean, you know, it's been sort of my pet project of the offseason, really looking at explosive plays, big plays, whatever you want to call them, and the influence they have on football games, and the influence they have is massive. Nebraska offensively sort of dropped off the table last year in Big Ten play. They just weren't hitting those big plays. It makes it incredibly more difficult and less likely to score. And you saw their scoring average at the end of the year, and their scoring average in Big Ten play. Yeah, not encouraging from that perspective.
You score 21 and give up 20?
Right, exactly. And, you know, the defense did make improvements on that side. Diaco's even, I think, or at least he has been, another level beyond what Nebraska was able to do from year one to year two under Banker. But for the offense, I think that's the biggest growth opportunity. And I think you and I both agree, when you're upstairs in the box watching Nebraska's passing game, a lot of guys open, a lot of opportunities for those 20-yard gains. If you can see him, get him the ball. And I think Tanner Lee's going to be able to do that.
Listen, a lot of guys, and this isn't, you know, pinata time. Right. You got to preface it. A lot of guys open last year. A lot of guys open against Iowa last year. A lot of guys open against Tennessee last year. A lot of guys open against Ohio State. Not for long periods of time because, I mean, their secondary was great. But there were guys open. The offense will do that. And you've heard it. But you're going to see it. You're going to see square peg, square hole, period. And that's what you'll do. And I think the backside of the backfield, whoever they go with, will be nice. I want to go to the punt returners for a second because it kind of goes with Lee, this hype, this ability, and the playmakers in space. Were you surprised by Riley with his thoughts on the punt return competition? I mean, yeah, DeMornay is going to get first crack. I mean, he's kind of like, you know, your grandfather's buddy who's, you know, professor emeritus or whatever. I mean, it's his job till he doesn't want it or has to leave. And he's got one more year before he's got to leave. So I'm wondering if this is a message out there similar to that of, I mean, yeah, the Jebbia praise was warranted, but it's also, How are you going to respond, Patrick O'Brien, because they were asked a direct question about who's the number two quarterback? Well, with the punt return thing, it's out there. If Lindsey's special, and he damn well could be, You have Morgan. It's weird to rotate
at
that spot. That said, if you're that thin at receiver, and there's maybe a few plays at this point that Lindsey's good with, it is going to be DPE and Stanley Show, period, with some help from Reimers.
Yeah, I think that's the only reason you would consider taking DPE off of that.
At least, spell him.
Yeah,
right?
At least spell him. Because he's so special back there. And when he's healthy, you know, it's easy to remember that and think, oh, well, that was all his freshman year. Then he got hurt. But, I mean,
takes a year to get back a lot of times.
And he flipped that Oregon game with his punt return right before. It wasn't a touchdown, but it led to a score. And right before the half there, I feel like there was another one that I'm forgetting off the top of my head last season. But, I mean, he's still
in. That set them up to be in the top six against Wisconsin, that return against Oregon.
Yeah.
Absolute momentum shifter of the ballgame.
Yeah, it absolutely saved it because things were looking pretty rough there in the first half.
20-7, for God's sake.
Yep. There's just
– Danny's trying to remember that, but that was, three captain bottles. I'm kidding. Go for it. I gotta throw in an alcohol drink and rib at my new producer,
right,
who's in the student section beating his chest.
And that was with what I think we can all agree was a below replacement level punt return scheme, for lack of a better term.
Oh, you mean the other 10 didn't help all the time?
Well, I think they were trying, but they were doing what they told.
Just
add that
just
back in
the way.
Add that back in, and
don't
I'm
get caught.
Plenty ready to see more from DPE. He has earned it.
I go back to trust, and it's just grody as his injury was. I mean, you saw some hesitation. And he kind of said, screw it, I'm just returning this one against Oregon, right? But you saw a couple previous punts against Oregon where he's a little hesitant. Now that's got to be gone. And the practices that have been open that we've seen, he hasn't looked hesitant to me, but I mean, there's not been 10 dudes trying to kill him either. I've not seen live special teams yet this year.
Yeah, but judging from how he's been attacking things at wide receiver, makes me feel pretty good about just that overall sense. You know, you want to see it a little bit in terms of punt return specifically, but I think he's made progress in that area based on...
That's been a question mark. Okay, he's been kind of a side item on the plate, so to speak, at wide receiver, and he's performed well. Specifically, Minnesota has ticked him off somehow, some way. That's been his best games. But I look at him, if you are going to curtail his work a bit, it is because of the fact you need him catching 50 to 60 passes this year. And you just don't want some cowboy on punt team going down there and taking his other knee out.
Yeah, it's a valid concern, and I think some of it will have to do with...
When push comes to shove, he's out there, period. Big game to change a game.
Absolutely, yeah, and some of it will depend a little bit on how things shake out after the first couple of games. You might see the number of touches he's getting a wide receiver and think, well, maybe that limits what Tyjon is getting in the passing game a little bit, just because you don't want to take DP off the field. Sprinkle him in a punt return.
No, I think with Lindsey... And you had a story about it last week as far as, how much production do you really have as a freshman? And from a receiving standpoint, it's minimal. I mean, it just is. You're not going out there. And who's a freshman wide receiver that went crazy? I'm trying to remember. Probably the guys Matt Millen picked with Detroit out of SC, I'm thinking. Guys that came out super early were sophomores. Larry Fitzgerald's one with Pitt as a sophomore, a true sophomore, or maybe like a prep transfer. But it's rare for a sophomore to go get 80 catches for a G.
Yeah,
at
Nebraska, it's been about 20 catches, 250 yards, mm-hmm. two or three touchdowns, which, and that's Jordan Westerkamp, that's Stanley Morgan Jr. I mean, guys that became really good receivers and were really good enough to play right away.
Like the last freshman guy to catch a ton of passes and lead the team in receiving was, I guarantee, is Johnny Mitchell.
Probably right.
And he was a tight end.
Yep.
It's been forever. We'll dive more into the punt return side of things. Brad Edwards, ESPN College Game Day, will join us. The opening weekend is going to be just marvelous. We'll get his thoughts on that. We'll get his take on some of his Big Ten previews with not only Ohio State, but Penn State. Eric Crouch, Heisman winner, quarterback, is going to join us in 5 minutes. He's also part of Legends Night at Haymarket Park with Mike Rozier, Johnny Rogers, and Coach Osborne. And they are all throwing out a simultaneous ceremonial first pitch. And that thing gets rocking at 6:45. That's when the game starts Saturday. You can log on saltdogs.com/legends to get your tickets and get your autograph vouchers. The Heisman winners, the legends, will be on hand at Haymarket on Saturday. For over 80 years, we've been doing things the AgriGold way. And over the decades, together, we've built a brand that's truly different. Different because of our knowledge. Different because of our passion. Different because we represent the voice of our customer. Our true partners, providing customers with the very best seed, always backed by a handshake and a promise of a more diverse, less risk, greater yield. For more information, visit your friends at agrigold.com, 800-262-7333. Number to get in to your friends at AgriGold. Okay, here is what we have. I told you there's bribery going on today. We have soccer tickets. We have Salt Dog tickets, VIP seats, the four-pack. For Legends Saturday at Haymarket. And, yeah, we have the Lincoln Racehorse setup that's going on. That is live racing the 8th and 15th of September at the Lincoln Race Course. And you have a $25 gift card we'll give away. You have that cue to call. You had to hear for that. Lots of horse sounds with Peyton Manning and Ron Burgundy. It's good. Eric Crouch will tell you about Tanner Lee, about Nebraska, and about his pitching ability. Hail Varsity continues.
And now, back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Welcome in Heisman winner with Nebraska, and going to be at Haymarket Park on Saturday night for Legends Night. Eric Crouch with us. Eric, nice to talk to you again. How are you?
I'm doing great. I appreciate you guys having me on the show.
It is Legends Night, appropriately named for the Salt Dogs, and Saturday night at Haymarket Park. And yourself, Coach Osborne, Johnny Rogers, Mike Rozier, all three Heisman winners, and the legendary coach going to be on hand for that simultaneous first pitch, and should be a lot of fun. VIP experience. Can go find that saltdogs.com/legends. And so first question I've got for you is your right arm. How loose is it? Are you getting ready?
Well, it's football season. So I get a lot of energy about this time of year. No. I've done a couple of the first pitches, and I think I've thrown my arm out many. No. I take it easy. It's just a lot of fun to be out there and supporting the event and the community. We have a great time with it.
How many events do you get a chance to do? You're extremely busy. I know you're in business. You're also coaching football, and do you get a chance to catch up with Rozier and Johnny much throughout the year, or is it kind of sparse?
Well, it's quite often. I mean, we talk to each other a lot throughout the year, whether it's on the phone or at different events, and we've built a special bond over the last 16 years, and I'm fortunate. These guys, they've played the game at a very high level. They were incredible athletes, and every time I get a chance to spend with them, as well with Coach Tom Osborne, I just I can't take it for granted. You got to enjoy the moment, enjoy the time that you have with them, and try to have fun, try to smile, and we're all about the community. We're all about getting out there and giving fans basically just a thank you.
Well, fans can see Eric Crouch. He's with us here on Hail Varsity Radio. Coach Osborne, Johnny Rogers, Mike Rozier, Saturday, Haymarket Park at Salt Dogs. And Sioux City, as things get rocking at 6:45, a little after 6 is when that ceremonial pitch will be thrown out. The simultaneous first pitch. I was talking to Charlie Meyer yesterday, and I put the over-under at 75 miles per hour for Coach Osborne. Is that too high, too low, just right?
I'm 75. Wow. I mean, I know he played quarterback. I mean, 75 is up there. I have to go. I think you might want to lower that just a little bit.
Did you do much baseball as a kid? I know you did track and obviously football, but
yeah, Chris, I didn't. I was, I grabbed a baseball in the gym one time in high school, and I threw it right in the dirt, and I'm like, I'm done. I can't do it. My motion was like throwing it, you know, from my ear and not like reaching back and using my entire arm. So I just didn't have the mechanics. I'd always just thrown a football, and you know, I really like sports where you hit people. That's the fun. That's when I had fun.
Eric, I got to get your thoughts here for a few minutes on Nebraska 2017. How optimistic are you with the Huskers, with Coach Riley and Tanner Lee?
Well, I'm optimistic about the whole package. A quarterback with some experience, you know, maybe not the level that Nebraska is used to having, but experience in playing, a very good talent, willing to learn, and I like that about Tanner Lee. I think that now that Coach Riley's, you know, been in the system, and Coach Danny Langsdorf as well has been here, has had some time to kind of settle in. We've got an exciting, a new, very energetic defensive coordinator.
Mm-hmm.
I think the season is looking good. I'm very optimistic. I mean, I don't know how long it's been since I've been this excited about the football season.
Eric Crouch is with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at Crouch Eric on Twitter is where you can follow him. And Nebraska seems to be kind of building up. I mean, the recruiting's been pretty self-explanatory via social media and just how the classes are ranked. I know that needs to translate on the field. They won 9 games last year. There are opportunities to do that again this year, but also some big games on that schedule. And how did you treat big games, and how was the program culture kind of geared toward big games? And I look at your career, Eric, and you won the Heisman. You took the team to a national championship. You finished number 2 in the country. Your sophomore year. I mean, you had an incredible career. You won a ton of big games. I'm thinking the Notre Dames, the Oklahomas, the bowl games, the Tennessee game. You know, guys kind of fed off of you. How were you able to do that, and how does the team get ready? I mean, it doesn't happen until it happens, right, when you win that first big game?
Right. Well, let's go back to the recruiting comment. You know, you got to go back as far as Tom Osborne and what they did in 94, 95. Those classes weren't ranked in the top 25. So I think it's a matter of the dynamics of the game. I mean, football is so dynamic. There's so many moving parts, and you got to have a great strength and conditioning program. You got to have excited, energetic coaches that really want to go out and recruit, and Nebraska has that, and they're bringing in better talent each year. You see the, like you said, the recruits, how they're ranked, that's going up. Nebraska's done a fantastic job at that. That doesn't mean you're going to translate it to winning games. I mean, you have to have the team chemistry, and I think if you look back, you're asking me about the big games. It goes back to the summers and the winters. You know, what do you do as a leader in the summer? And what do you do as a leader in the winter to prepare for the spring? And how do you translate that into being successful during the season? I mean, it's college athletics asks a lot out of the student athlete. I mean, you're always working hard every single day. Right after class, you're in the weight room. You're watching film. And that just doesn't happen during the football season. That has to happen during the winter. It has to happen during the spring. And it has to translate into the football field during your summer conditioning workouts before it can even come close to being successful when the season starts. So, I mean, if you ask me about successful games like Notre Dame and the teams that, you know, beating Oklahoma at home, and maybe, you know, we weren't favored to win those games, but we were able to do it. It starts way before the football season starts. And I think that's why if you look at Nebraska as a whole right now, there are some positions they have work to do, but they've been building to this point. So, I mean, my expectations are that Nebraska is playing for a conference championship this year. I would love to see them playing in that game. Now, you notice I didn't say they have to win a conference championship. I want them to be playing in a conference championship. Now, their goals might be different, but I'm just saying based on what I know, and based on what I see right now.
Eric Crouch with us, Hail Varsity Radio. It's set up, and there's opportunity there. And you're right, there's been a different feel all the way from winter conditioning to the summertime. The workouts were pretty grueling. That was the word anyway. Trust me, I wasn't in the gym with them. and then you see them kind of geared up. And it's been a longer camp as well. Eric, what's your take on the climate right now of transfers with quarterbacks? Because it seems like you have 2 to 3 kids leaving major programs every year because they get beat out. And the assumption is, well, if they take care of me in year one, I won't beat this guy out in year two. What's your reaction to that?
Well, Chris, I've had a similar situation. I mean, these are kids 18 to 22 or 23 years old. Mm-hmm. They're very competitive. They all were very successful in their high school programs. And now it's time to compete. And there's a time where you have to look yourself in the eye. And you have to say, was I made for this? And I was just speaking to a football team here recently, within the last week. And my comments to them were, there's competition in this room. It was a very small group of kids. There's competition in this room for the same positions. And you're on the same team. How do you make one another better? Well, it's by going out and helping one another. And so if you have the attitude that I saw when I met with the quarterbacks at Nebraska this summer, that's the type of attitude that you need to create a healthy, competitive environment. If you have guys that want to leave and they're vocal about it, that's not healthy. I learned a lot from my situation. And that's why I'm able to speak about it, because I've also, after Nebraska, got to experience those types of similar situations in other organizations professionally. And I got to see where a guy, if he was helpful and, you know, he was creating a competitive environment, how that bonded the team and how it made everyone better. And I hope that they're able to do that this year.
Eric Crouch is with us, Hale Varsity Radio. He will be at Haymarket Park. It is Legends Night, Saturday the 26th, as it'll be so many legends on hand for you. SaltDogs.com/legends is where you log on, get your tickets. Coach Osborne, Johnny Rogers, Mike Rozier. We're speaking with Heisman winner Eric Crouch. Souvenir Saturday Heisman autograph baseballs to give away, sponsored by Creek Carrier. The first 2,500 fans Saturday night. And get logged on and get your way in to go meet these Husker legends at Haymarket with the Salt Dogs this Saturday. Eric Crouch with us. Eric, to wrap up, a thought on Tanner Lee and just your communication with him. I know you spoke with that quarterback room. Langsdorf kind of grabbed you in the hallway, I think, is the story down at Memorial Stadium. And just what have your interactions been like with Tanner, if you want to share? And from an offensive scheme, do you like this scheme for Nebraska in the Big Ten?
I always make myself, I want the guys to know they're a young group with no experience of playing at Nebraska. And that can be a very daunting task or a very tough feeling to have, a lot of pressure. And I don't want them to feel that pressure. I want them to go out and play the game and be athletes and be leaders and have fun and experience the game like I did at Nebraska. So I wanted to make sure they knew that I was available at all times. Mm-hmm. And my conversations in my meetings were not directly with Tanner Lee. I met with the entire quarterback group, including Coach Langsdorf. And I told them stories and told them my experiences and just wanted to help them. So I like what they're doing. I look at it like, man, I wish I could have been in the spread offense when I was playing the game. I think that would have been a lot of fun and using the whole field. Mm-hmm. Certainly would have saved me a few operations now that I look back on it. But I'm excited about that offense. I think the biggest thing is going to be when you get later in the season and when you're playing in inclement weather, you're up in Wisconsin or you're out there in Penn State, are you going to be able to throw the ball late? Mm-hmm. And I hope that they're able to understand how important a running game still is to the game of college football and how important it is to the history and tradition of Nebraska. That's not the first and foremost, but just understanding, I think, that when you do establish a running game, you own the line of scrimmage, and then you're able to have play action or any type of passing game that you want off of that. But Tanner Lee is a very smart player, smart quarterback, and I expect that he'll do very well his first year.
Eric Crouch. Eric, great to catch up with you again. We'll do this again, and thanks for your time, and thanks for coming out with the Salt Dogs on Saturday.
You're welcome. Nice talking to you.
And we're back.
Fellas, you think we could listen to the radio
on Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Yes! That's awesome!
Back to it. It's Hail Varsity Radio, Hail Varsity Magazine, HailVarsity.com, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Chris Schmidt, Brandon Vogel is here. Mike Shewhart is in. It is Shoey time, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment. Membership options for you, and fall golf is beautiful. Membership benefits, membership pricing, youth golf, teaching and instruction for all ages. WildernessRidgeGolf.com, 402-434-5106. And, of course, Chris Thompson and Director of Instruction, Husker Golf, Mike Shewhart with us. Shewig, missed you. How are you, bud?
I'm doing great.
I am the happiest guy. I had Taco Tuesday last night at Wilderness.
Yeah, I heard it was good, huh?
I had me some tilapia.
Ooh, that sounds pretty
margarita.
Good.
And margarita.
That's even better.
And the thing that, I mean, the deck was full.
Yeah.
It's beautiful out.
It's so nice out. How about this whole month?
Man, oh,
it's been unbelievable.
You've ordered it up, right?
Oh, yeah, because, of course.
You know, you're leading the football season. You want just comfortable temperatures. And, man, it's been just incredible weather for golf. And you got 27 holes out of Wilderness. You got the 18-hole championship course. The Talon course is 9. That's where I take junior. But you can go get 9 in. It's great options at Wilderness. And we got a lot to cover, man. I mean, we've got Tiger Woods news. Not great news for him, but Tiger's in the news. You have
Solheim. He's always in the news.
He is, the Solheim Cup. And also you have Husker Golf that's getting ready to rock.
Yeah, man. We had our first practice on Tuesday. So we play our first tournament the 1st, so right around the corner.
Yeah.
See, yeah, they get started to school.
All wave at you.
Pretty much they're playing right
away.
A week
from Friday.
So it was fun. I mean, they were very excited. Energy was high, so we're looking forward to a great season.
How's the first practice go? I mean, how do you indoctrinate the – I mean, golf's – people have been playing it competitively for a while, obviously, and they got impressed to be on the Nebraska team. All that said, it's still college. How do you kind of show them how it's done? How do you do that first practice as a coach?
Yeah, a lot of it is just talking about what we're going to do throughout the season, some things that we want to do, some things that maybe they were implementing for the first time, some things that we've been doing in the past. And their strength and conditioning coach came out and showed them basically a warm-up that we're going to implement basically every day before mm-hmm. practice, every day before a tournament. Just some things that are really good for golf and good for them, getting them ready to go out and play and practice. So it does a lot of good things, prevents injuries and, mm-hmm. you know, all those good things. So just showing them a little bit of doing that. We went out and did some wedge work. So getting things dialed in on, they know how far they hit their wedges. Pretty important club to have in your bag and pretty important to be able
to use
it. You
got to know your
correctly.
Max, right?
So it's like, yeah, that's pretty much how you hit a half shot, how you hit three quarters, how you hit a full, you know. And a lot of the girls carry three wedges in their bags. So it's like knowing, man, what all those clubs do.
Mm-hmm.
So just starting to get them comfortable with a lot of what we're going to practice, a lot of things we're going to work on throughout the year. And it's important because those are things that are important to the game to give you a chance to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also things that we see throughout the year on areas that we are deficient
mm-hmm.
or we can improve upon, you know, some better than others. But and typically that's always an area that we see that I call it my getter and my saver, because your wedge game is so important to you, because when you do the things you want to do and you hit good shots down there, it puts you in position to get what you're looking
for.
It's the score, man.
Score
I'm trying
well.
To make birdies. But the other great thing is when you're out of position, if you're good enough to get it back into position and get one of those clubs in your hand, you can save par a lot of times.
Yeah.
So it's like
the getter and the saver.
The getter and the saver, man. Gets what I want, it saves what I got. So it's like I don't want to be giving stuff back, man. I want to be keeping it and getting more. So it's really important. We stress that a lot and becoming very good with your wedges. If you watch the tour players, the best players in the world, that's one of the reasons they're the best players
you
in the world.
Putt for dough.
Yeah, you
and,
do.
And to be able to putt for dough, you got to get that wedge.
Yeah,
right?
They're the best wedge players going. That's why they're out there. That's one of the reasons they're out there. You know, there's a lot of great players out there, but it's like, well, why? This guy's really good. Why is he not playing on tour? It's because he's probably not as good of a wedge player as the guys that are out there. They're
give me
incredible.
a common hurdle with the wedge game for folks that love golf, that are probably decent, but maybe they're between – a great round for them's around 90. Maybe they break 90. maybe they're in the 80s, and maybe they the best they've ever shot has been upper 70s, low 80s, and, you know, a train wreck of a day, which is not a bad day because you're still golfing, is you hit triple, okay?
Yeah.
And a lot of it where you lose your backside is either just being in tough lies, but it's wedge, right?
Yeah, no question.
It's extra putts, and it's the approach.
Because they kind of go hand in hand with one another, you know? It's like if you're decent with your wedge, just even pitching a shot from close proximity to the green. I mean, if you can pitch it, if you hit a decent pitch shot, the closer your ball is to the hole, the higher the likelihood of it going in or your next shot going in, it increases. So, well, if you pitch it 20 feet, you're not going to make too many 20-footers all the time. So, and the likelihood of you actually three-putting from 20 feet goes up tremendously. So it's like you hit a bad pitch and then you three-putt. So it's like, wow, you just added two shots to your score pretty quickly.
Some of us do that.
Yeah. So it's like learning how to pitch it, learning how to hit wedge shots just a little bit better. It's about proximity. If you can get the thing closer to the hole,
yeah,
the likelihood of you three-putting goes down immensely, and the likelihood of you making it goes up immensely. So it's like pretty soon you start learning how to save a shot or two, you know, so your triple, you just made a bogey.
Mm-hmm.
And man,
instead of a triple bogey.
Yeah. So, I mean, those shots add up. If you only do that one or two times in the course of a round, you know, poorly, that's four extra shots you're taking. You know, you learn how to be efficient with it pretty soon. I mean, you're saving, you know, four shots in the course of 18. Maybe four times it happens. That's eight shots it can save you. Well, you take eight shots off your score, man.
You're a happy guy and you're back tomorrow.
Exactly. So, I mean, it's really
Let's
important.
Let's go make a deal on the ninth green again. Come on.
And you got to use it a lot. I mean, you're just faced with a lot, you know. You putting the golf ball consists of 40% of the strokes that you'll take. You add your chipping and your pitching, and I even go one step farther and adding, I call it my scoring shots. When I have a shot from 100 yards or in or 80 yards and closer to the green, you're probably over 60% of the shots you're going to take in the course of a round is going to be doing that, you know? So it's like probably closer to 70, 65. So it's like you're doing a lot with your putter and your wedges. So it's like, wow, how about we work on it and be pretty good
at it? Don't be terrible at it either.
That's right. If you're terrible at it, it's going to be hard to really play very well.
And at least find some happy place of consistency.
Yeah.
I mean, don't expect to be Rory.
And you need to
Spieth.
Exactly.
But be you and just kind of whittle down.
Just be efficient.
The extra putt and the extra chip.
And be just be a little more efficient at what you're doing. And you should be able to do that because putting is it doesn't take a big stroke.
No, you just got to relax and find. You got to find a groove, though.
Chipping is kind of the same thing. You need to understand the technique behind it because there is some technique. That it's not difficult, but there's some technique. If you learn how to do it, you can be pretty good at it.
Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf segment, reminding you about Wilderness. How about Cleveland Clubs? Need new clubs? Come on out. Cleveland Fit Day at Wilderness, August 30th from 4 to 7. That's right. Cleveland Fit Day at Wilderness, August 30th from 4 to 7. Get on out there, wildernessridgegolf.com. Also, don't forget $5 Fridays with that talent course.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, the Wilderness Ridge Golf segment continues. Mike Shewhart, Shuey is in studio. Brandon Vogel is off rocking it on HailVarsity.com. He'll be back for Brad Edwards in about 10 minutes. Eric Crouch joined us to get the hour going. All right, Rory McIlroy, not sure about the rest of his 2017 calendar, Shuey, but it sounds like he'll play a lot more in 18. What are your thoughts on Rory's season?
Disappointing.
Yeah.
Obviously for him, too. I mean, that guy's super talented, and I mean, he played well. You know, if you look at some of his finishes and what he did, I mean, but not up to probably his standards and his expectations and a lot of other people's. You know, he's just fighting the putter. I saw a thing, they were working on his putting, he's changing his putting. It's like, man, here's a guy that's number one in the world. So he obviously putted pretty good, being number one in the world and dominating like he did, and now he has to change his putting.
So, why did he overcorrect?
It's just that that's the way they
You're
are.
You're always trying to work and make it better, and sometimes you make it worse, right?
Yeah, sometimes you do, you know. But also sometimes you it takes time to make a change, you know. Those guys are really talented at what they can do, but sometimes it just takes time to get really comfortable doing it and understand how it works. You know, and that's sometimes they just fall a little in that trap at times that they feel like they need to do that to take the next step or to get back to where they were and things like that. And sometimes, I mean, it's like, man, you just don't need to do things like that. You don't need to make wholesale changes. I you know, I'm a little skeptical because he totally changed his putting, you know, how his putter works, how he goes about doing it. And it's like, did he need to? I don't know. Obviously, he didn't putt that great, but did he really need to? Again, I go back into, well, his old putty.
Broke or not.
Exactly. It's like it worked at one time, so it's like.
What do you tell your young kids, your champion divot dogs with their, I mean, you're starting them out early and you're working on fundamentals, but how do they take to change or critique when it comes to just.
They're easy.
The technical side.
Yeah, they're easy because they don't know any different, you know. It's like,
well, sure, okay. He told me to do it.
Exactly. That's pretty much what they do. So it's like, oh, he told me to do that. So that's what I'm supposed to do. And it's like, oh, okay, I'll just do that. So, I mean, they're like a chameleon, man. They're so easily molded into to what they need to do. It's pretty funny. Now, the older we get, the longer we've stuck with doing something.
Stuck in our ways.
It gets a little more difficult because you get the physical part is not that hard. It's the mental part because it's different.
Mm-hmm.
And as it's different, I always say it's like your brain will lie to you all the time because when I make you do this and I want you to do this, it's telling you, oh boy, this is kind of weird. This is different. And it usually is telling you that something not good is going to happen. So it's like, how do you know that? You've never done it like that before. So you're already anticipating that something good's not going to happen or something that it feels like is going to happen is going to happen. But then as we do it, and we do it like we're supposed to be doing it, it's like that does not happen. Usually the opposite happens, and it's pretty good. That's where I say physics always rules. So it's like if I can get you to do this and have the physics of what's happening happen, I mean, the ball's going to do a certain thing. And it's like we just have to rewire your brain a little bit so you're not getting in the way.
Stay out of your own way. I like it. Mike Shewhart, Wilderness Ridge Golf Segment. Shuey, we'll see you next week. And you got the tournament going for Nebraska Golf September 1st. Brandon Vogel coming on back in and get that tee time for a gorgeous weekend ahead. WildernessRidgeGolf.com. Brad Edwards, Mr. College Football, 5 minutes away on Hail Varsity, presented by the Nebraska Lottery.
Welcome to Hail Varsity Radio, the voice of Husker Nation. Insight, opinion, expertise, with the biggest and best names talking Nebraska across the state. Join the show on Twitter at Hail Varsity and at Schmitz_radio. Call in at 402-466-ESPN or 1-800-825-5865. Here's Chris Schmitz.
And don't forget Brandon Vogel. At Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter of HailVarsity.com and magazine and author Brandon L. Vogel. Danny is producing. We welcome in College Football Insider and part of College Game Day and ESPN.com as well. Brad Edwards with us at JBradEdwards on Twitter. Brad, I assume in about 8 days or so, 9 days, you are off to your first location of the college football season. How are you, sir?
Oh, I'm doing well. We're getting ready for that first show. We actually have a season preview show, which will be on ESPN Radio tomorrow night. I'm not sure if people will get it in your area or whether it'll be preempted by baseball or something else like that. But we will be starting our season by discussing the various conferences and what we're going to expect. And one more note, as we're winding up our preseason prep, we are in the middle of our total QBR college fantasy draft. And I remember last year we talked about this, and I told you I drafted Tommy Armstrong. Well, I followed up by just taking Tanner Lee in the fourth round. So going back to the well with Mike Riley, and Tommy Armstrong was, he had some good games. I think he was worth the investment for the round I took him in. I'm hoping Tanner Lee is even more so.
You're a wise guy when it comes to numbers. And fourth round, and I'm equating this to my – I've been in a fantasy football league for 25 years this year. Now, yes, I am a degenerate, Brad, before you ask. but you go in fourth round on Tanner Lee. You got to like what you see. Am I implying too much?
Well, No. So the one thing to keep in mind here is that this is a total QBR league. So we're only drafting quarterbacks. And he was the 47th overall pick. Now, when you consider that Tommy Armstrong didn't finish the season all that high in total QBR last year, and that what little of a record we do have of Tanner Lee in total QBR from his Tulane days is not good, I was hoping that I would be able to get him that late, and I did. But you know what? As we talked back, I think it was in the spring. I'm optimistic. Now, obviously, you've seen all the hype that's been generated by some comments that people have made after watching him at practice recently, and in the Manning camp and all that stuff. But I was encouraged just by the fact that looking back at his bio, that he was recruited by both Dan Mullen and Justin Fuente coming out of high school, because those guys know a lot about quarterback, and they've developed a number of them over the years. And that, to me, was way – the fact that they did recruit him was way more significant and telling than the fact that LSU didn't recruit him, which in some ways was almost a bonus, because LSU had such a poor track record of identifying good quarterbacks. So, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, just like your fan base is, that he has a good year.
Hey, Brad. Brandon Vogel here. I'm kind of fascinated by this total QBR league, because I know total QBR incorporates running, unlike, you know, your peer passing stats. So is there a bias in this draft? Do the peer passers go first? Are the dual threat guys more popular? How's it go?
Well, you know, dual threat guys, I would say, have greater potential overall. But this is it's total QBR, which is an efficiency metric, but it's also weighted based on how many plays you have. So let's just say his QBR is on a scale of 0 to 100. If you had two guys who for that game that weekend both had a QBR of around 80, one of them, let's just say, had 35 total plays, and the other one had 50 total plays. The guy with 50 plays is going to have a better score than the guy with 35. So somewhere there's a balance, like, you know, having 80 over 50 plays is probably about equal to having 85 over 35 plays, 40 plays, something like that. But so you're kind of looking at a combination of, of how efficient you expect the guy to be and how much use he's going to get. And so, you know, one of the things that I look at, even though I know he's not going to run as much as Armstrong did, I do think that there are questions with the running game, there are questions with the defense, where I think he could be, you know, playing most of the game every week and throwing a lot of passes. So I still think he's going to have a lot of action plays, and that's kind of what you're looking for. I mean, like a guy like Jalen Hurts at Alabama, while he is a dual threat and he is going to get you some stuff running, there are going to be games along the way where they're up 35 at halftime and he's not going to play in the second half, and you have to take that in consideration.
Brad Edwards with us, Hail Varsity Radio, at J. Brad Edwards on Twitter, ESPN Insider. Their college football preview begins tomorrow night on ESPN Radio, and of course you'll hear Brad with College Game Day on Saturdays. Now, Brad, let's spend a couple of minutes on the Big Ten, and as we get closer, there are some opportunity games yet again for the Big Ten. This year it's Michigan and Florida. Harbaugh's not releasing his roster. Florida's going to play 47 quarterbacks. The gamesmanship's going on. But as a whole, the Big Ten has four top 10 teams, coaches and AP, and you can go one way or the other on preseason rankings, but you have some really good teams. You have a easier schedule this year for Wisconsin. They still got to come to Lincoln, but they have been good. Michigan has the Florida opener. They have some tougher crossovers. And then they go to Camp Randall this year, but Michigan's supposed to just kind of keep on rolling and maybe keep climbing the ladder. Ohio State has 9 captains, right? And they are out for blood and redemption. And then there's, you know, Michigan State. Do they bounce back? And oh yeah, by the way, Penn State, that giant target they now have on their back. How do they live? Are you interested or as interested in the Big Ten this year? Some of those storylines.
Yeah, I think it's still fascinating. You know, there are a few reasons. I mean, one is that Ohio State laid such an egg in the playoff last year, and especially going right out and getting Kevin Wilson. Mm-hmm. I think everybody's looking forward to seeing how much better they get on offense. I mean, they've already been dominating the conference ever since Urban Meyer got there. But despite their overall record in conference play, they've only won one conference title with him, and so that it's hard to believe. But you know, that provides a lot of motivation for those guys, as if they needed anything to make them better. You know, Michigan is a team that I think still has a chance to be very good. I don't know, you know, how many games they might lose in the first half of the season as they just get more experience at certain positions. But if they can, you know, if they can overcome some of those questions at certain positions early and you know, survive the first half of the year with no more than one loss, they could be in the mix again. Obviously, Wisconsin, number one, because they're good, but number two, because of that schedule, they've got a really good chance to be in that mix and maybe get to the Big Ten championship game with no more than one loss. And then, of course, there's Penn State, which, you know, how do they respond, like you said, with the target on their back now? It's very different from nobody expecting anything from you, especially when you look at the way that they did it last year and the big play offense. I mean, Saquon Barkley is, you know, still one of the best running backs in college football, but I don't know that you can expect they're going to be able to connect on as many long pass plays as they did a year ago. But it's going to be fascinating to watch, and so yeah, I think the Big Ten, not just the East, is going to be very interesting for college football.
Brad Navolo again, Alabama topped both polls, no surprise there. But there's a couple of teams that are intriguing to me, at least in the SEC West. I want to see what you think. If there was a team to knock Alabama off and maybe win that division between Auburn and LSU, is there one you like more than the other?
I would say Auburn for two reasons. One is that Alabama has to go to Auburn and Alabama host LSU. And then the last few years in the Alabama-LSU series, it has been just, you know, knockdown, drag out, decided in the final minutes in Baton Rouge. But the games in Tuscaloosa, Alabama's run away with them in the second half. So I don't know that LSU's as much of a threat to them in Tuscaloosa. And then the second reason is quarterback. I mean, right now, look, Danny Etling, he's probably going to get better. But I don't think he's the style of quarterback who really threatens Alabama. He's not going to do a lot with his legs. And while Jarrett Stidham is certainly not Cam Newton or Nick Marshall as a runner, I think he's more athletic than most people know, and I think he'll be able to do enough in that offense that you know, he'll be effective. And so I think the combination of Auburn being at home against Alabama and having a quarterback, you know, who can threaten them with his legs, I think that those two give Auburn the better chance. But the trick for Auburn is, they're probably going to have to get to the Iron Bowl with no more than one conference loss to have a chance to, you know, to win the division. Because I don't know that Alabama is going to lose a conference game prior to that. They could lose to Florida State in the opener, but I have a hard time seeing them lose an SEC game prior to that last one. So I would give Auburn the better chance. I do think, though, if they're not going to win a fourth straight SEC title, it's going to be because they failed to win the West. I don't think that any of the teams in the East have a very good chance to knock them off in the title game.
So, like, worst case scenario for some of these teams trying to get back to New Year's Day sixes, maybe you see a two-loss angry Alabama. I mean, that's just price of doing business, perhaps.
Yeah.
Brad Edwards is with us. Brad, where are you at on USC in the Pac-12? I know they don't meet Washington until potentially the Pac-12 championship game, but are you in on SC being a playoff favorite? I know they're ranked really high. I know they're loaded talent-wise, but schedule-wise, I mean, it's still there are some landmines there that could pop could pop up for them. And I mean, they have Texas, they have Stanford. I mean, they have some difficult games.
They do. Now, all of that said, they are also at Notre Dame.
Yes.
All of that said, though, the Pac-12 South is not a very strong division, and I think that Stanford is probably their most difficult conference game. And so there's no excuse for them not being in the Pac-12 title game. So if they're there, obviously they have a good chance to win the conference. As far as, you know, being able to navigate all of that and get to that Pac-12 title game with no more than one loss overall and still be in the playoff hunt, I do have my questions. None of those questions are about Sam Darnold. My biggest question is his offensive line. They lost three guys who were all essentially three-year starters, and that includes both tackles. And I don't care how good of a quarterback you are, having to replace both tackles is a concern. And then on the defensive front, while they have a couple of proven guys, I don't think that they, you know, have the depth that you would expect from a lot of national title contenders. And I think there's still some questions there on the line, just in terms of even in the starting lineup across the board, how good they are. And so I think in the trenches, there are potential issues for USC, and I'm not sure that that gives a lot of teams in the Pac-12 a good chance to beat them, but I think they certainly will have a few spots they could slip up. And look, if they lose to Stanford and then lose to Notre Dame, that right there probably puts them out of the playoff. So I don't like USC as a favorite to reach the playoff. I actually picked Washington to come out of the Pac-12 again.
Okay.
If those teams played early in the season, I don't know which would be better for Washington, early or late, but that's who I expect to make it to the conference championship game. And I'm picking Washington to kind of get its revenge for what happened last year in Seattle.
Brad, I got about a minute left. The ACC is loaded on one side, but there's some up and comers on the other. Could you see a scenario where the ACC takes each other out enough that they miss the playoff?
I could. I could see the possibility that Miami, which is a young team starting an inexperienced quarterback, could lose a couple games early. They're almost certain to lose at Florida State.
Right.
That's the first month of the season. But if they lose another game somewhere along the way, they could win their division, get to the ACC title game, and not be a contender for the playoff. But by that stage of the season, I think Miami could be good enough to beat either Florida State in a rematch or Clemson.
Wow.
In that ACC title game. And if they do, there's a chance that it could knock the ACC out of the playoff. I think it'll be fascinating to see whether, you know, this is the year that the selection committee might finally take a two-loss team over a one-loss team into the playoff, because up until this point, they've pretty much just gone by the loss column.
Brad Edwards with us, ESPN Insider College Game Day, and you'll hear him tomorrow night, ESPN Radio College Football Preview at J. Brad Edwards. Brad, we'll catch up next week, and thanks for the time as always, and it's always great to talk some college football with you.
Always. All right, thanks, guys.
Take care. Brad Edwards with us, Hale Varsity Radio, and they are off, and of course, ESPN Radio across the state. You hear so much ESPN Radio. It's fantastic in their coverage of college football. Those Saturday night games or Saturday afternoon games, we love having them and carrying them. And Brad's part of that coverage, so good stuff from him. The ACC, man, I used to just kind of dismiss the ACC where it was Clemson that they're Clemsoning, start off great and then fade. Then there's Florida State carrying the banner, and then they weren't. But now the whole league is monstrous.
Virginia Tech, too. Don't count that.
No, they're really, really good. I mean, they could bop Tennessee start the year.
A.J. Bush.
Yeah, we're going to wear some Hokie hats for A.J. Caller 5 right now, Salt Dog tickets. That's for Saturday. That's for Legends Night. Caller 5, Salt Dog tickets, VIP seats, 4 of them. Caller 5, 466-3776.
Miss us?
Come here, brother. Give me a hug. Bring it in for the real thing.
We're on call for you. Catch the podcast at HaleVarsity.com, the ESPN Lincoln app, or download them on iTunes.
Saddle up, partner.
Back to Hale Varsity Radio.
Big thanks to Brad Edwards, ESPN Radio, ESPN Game Day. And, of course, last hour, Eric Crouch. Brandon Vogel is in studio of HaleVarsity.com and magazine. Still plenty of goodies for you. We still have Daniel give away a pair of six-month online subscriptions to HaleVarsity.com before we say goodbye. Danny also has the cue to call for a Lincoln Racecourse and live racing, a $25 gift card. And let's play that sounder real quick. This is what you're listening for between now and 6 tonight.
You talking about the horse that runs up and down the field every day?
Oh, yes. I've had my eye on that wonderful beast for decades.
I didn't really picture you as a guy who played the pony.
Play the ponies, okay? Do so. Lincoln Racecourse, awesome. West Denton Road, Highway 77. Pizza, beer, food. Live racing the 8th and 15th. Don't call now. We'll play the cue to call before 6. But I'm just reminding you. Danny, thank you, sir.
Do you get to use that gift card at the betting windows?
No, it's for food and drinks.
Oh, okay. I'm still interested.
That is so good. Can you cover my backside for 25? Well done. I mean, you sound as confident as I do with gambling.
Well, yeah, it's been a long time since I played the ponies, but I did frequent Fauner Park quite a lot in college.
It was a blast. Went out there for one of their race days, and we stopped out at Lincoln Racetrack for the Derby Day. So it was great. Okay, Dennis Dodd and his buddies at CBS Sports have put out another candid coaches article. We had Dennis on a couple weeks ago. They were slinging some mud about recruiting and $100 handshakes.
How many coaches cheat? That's what it was.
Yes, and they think 10 to 13%.
But right? most of the SEC.
Yeah, that's everyone just saying we hate you. All the good players go up there and they don't leave because they get money bags thrown at them. Okay. So over and underrated coaches here, Vogues. And coaches usually don't hate on one another. I mean, you have mutual respect with Osborne and Switzer. You had some hatred, but when push came to shove, Woody and Bo probably were good with each other. I mean, they maybe even did a Christmas. They were a protege. Okay, I mean, I just don't think of.
No, even looking at this, you know, so this is they asked coaches to respond anonymously. 48% chose not to answer, which is about what you'd expect. Most guys are just like, no, I'm not going to throw a fellow coach under the bus.
We're just not going to do it. So most overrated coach, based on those 52% of the coaching world responding, 13% say Harbaugh's overrated. I think they're annoyed as all get out by Harbaugh. I think if push came to shove, they would take him in a New York second on their roster because he develops quarterbacks, he hires incredible assistants, they play smash mouth football, and they win. They will win.
Yeah.
They're going to win at a higher clip than 10-3. They just will. They've had their share of 1-point wins. They've had their share of 1-point losses. Think 2 years ago with Sparty's. The kicker got whacked, and Sparty ended up in the end zone. Okay, they lost in overtime against Ohio State last year.
Yeah, they were up
in the final 3 minutes against Iowa. And they were up in the final 3 minutes against Florida State.
Right. Yeah, all three of their losses last year. You know, I do think
they didn't close it. And that's with a quarterback that I would, you know, pretend he got kidnapped and start somebody else.
Michigan's 2016 feels a little bit like Nebraska's 2009 to me. Where if those wins don't come, if Harbaugh were to leave or something happened, you know, things can fall apart for a number of reasons. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're going to as long as he's there. You might look back on that season as a Michigan fan, sort of like Nebraska looks at 2009 and said, with this defense and the numbers
anybody
that you can look at,
the quarterback
should have been a little bit more. Sure. And they were close to all three losses, less than a score, I think.
So Harbaugh comes in as the most overrated coach in college football. Do you agree or disagree with that? 466-377-6800-825-5865 can tap the line. Chilling Bridge Cork and Tap House. Saban comes in at number two, and he even admitted to DP that, yeah, I'm probably overrated, but I've got great players and a great staff. I don't overrate Saban at all, because he's a mother to work for, first of all. Second of all, he does find the best and the brightest, and he'll pay you to put up with him, and he'll make you great along the way and teach you some things. And your job is to be at his level of intensity all the time, which may mean like 2 hours of not hating someone or something in a 24-hour day. So I think Saban being number two as far as overrated, it kind of comes down to jealousy. You have two elite coaches right now that have won at a lot of spots. And Saban did it at LSU, never quite did it in pro ball. Wants to erase his time at Michigan State just because he just couldn't compete at a better than maybe 7-5 level. Yeah. Right, and then there's Harbaugh, who's really been great everywhere. Kiffin people hate, and I think by the time the Lane Kiffin story is written, I think he will be a lot like his father, and that is you'll remember him positively for his job as a coordinator. Yeah. Tremendous offensive mind. Stad Monty, a great defensive coordinator, but they are Lane's a joke as a head coach. He's immature, and I don't think that'll ever change. And he's just waiting to get another shot to fail as a head coach before making a million somewhere as a coordinator into his 50s.
Yep, he's getting another shot. He's one of those guys that continues to, well, failing. You don't fail upward to FAU, but everything.
He'll fail upward again.
Yeah, yeah.
Meaning that he won't be at FAU long enough because some of the program's going to take another run at him.
Well, we'll see if he can get that program.
What would have happened at Tennessee? What do you think he would have done at Tennessee?
I think
they were 7-6.
That would have been his best move, actually. And you
just
know,
to
it
stay?
Was. It's weird to look at him because just to stay. So the circumstance. So USC calls.
You know, he was 11-2 and number 5 in the country with Blondie. I forget his name, but Barkley.
Yeah.
They were really good. They crushed Oregon one year. They were really good.
I mean, USC is probably the only place he leaves.
They couldn't go
Tennessee.
To a bowl game, though.
Yeah. Probably the only place he leaves Tennessee for was that job. And it's just that Tennessee team was getting better quickly. I think they were poised to win.
They had loaded talent.
Yep. And, I mean, he obviously found that at USC as well. I just don't know how good you can be at FAU and where you can go from there, but we'll see.
Okay, more of the overrated list. Lovie Smith. Lovie hates recruiting is probably my bet. Lovie hates talking to people, and Lovie probably hates trying to relate to 18-year-olds. He wants to get back to the NFL but be his boss again. Similar situation. Brian Kelly is kind of a victim of his own success. I mean, he built Notre Dame up. He's had some really good skill guys in there. They've been tough. They've been physical. I don't know where his coordinator's at. He just whacked his last defensive coordinator. Prior to that, he had Diaco, who's incredible at Notre Dame. And then at UConn defensively, they were a good football team in a short amount of time. I don't think Kelly's overrated. I think he's just a wear out. I think he's kind of like Harbaugh, where he'll wear people out around him. Muschamp, I'm interested because I'm kind of buying the narrative of he came into Florida following Urban Meyer, which is a no-thank-you job. It's Zook following Spurrier, okay? You just don't do it. You don't follow a guy who's won championships there in Gainesville. And Muschamp is a defensive guy. Can they get worth a damn offensively at South Carolina? I don't know. He's following Spurrier. It's just not a good situation.
Yeah, well, so they have some comments from some of the coaches at the bottom here, and one of them's telling, so this is why one coach said, "Well, Muschamp's overrated. He's been in a couple of Cadillacs and he's wrecked them."
That's hilarious.
Yes, and I mean it's the
he has wrecked them.
It's the perfect.
But coach. He's driving the. He's good enough to get the keys to Cadillac, though.
Well, and that's the thing. That's why you can see another coach saying, "Yeah, he's overrated," because I would love to have the keys to the Texas job and then not take it. The keys to the Florida job or the key to the South Carolina job. they don't look at it, I guess, necessarily.
The fact that you got it.
It's following who they had to follow, although that's a valid point, too. A perfectly valid point.
And following Urban, I mean, the scholarship number was down to like 60.
Yeah, that Florida team was a wreck by the time.
It was brutal. I mean, it just was. So 48% chose not to answer. And Tom Herman comes in at 4%. I think Herman's for real. I think Herman's absolutely for real because programs he's been to, they have been at heights they'd never been before, or they're maintaining. It's not just build up and then leave. I mean, the Iowa State teams, you remember that Nebraska fan, and he was monstrous on that as the offensive coordinator with like average Texas talent that found their way to Ames. He was incredible at Houston because he went in there day one, convinced a five-star defensive tackle to stay home. Kids there now this year, I forget his name, but they beat Florida State. And they've done a pretty good job of not getting too fat-headed. Houston, I know his Houston team ended up with three losses last year. I think about halfway through they knew he was gone to Texas.
Yeah.
So they checked out.
That's the jealousy vote there.
Again. But most of this list, aside from Kiffin, is a jealousy vote or I'm not impressed with you.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's very much with Herman, a sense of he's got the Texas job. Did he pay his dues? And, you know, there's such a narrow window. You think about any.
That's a great question. But he was good. He was seen as good enough or as vital enough to guys who've won championships to. You pay dues for them. Let's just get them.
Yeah, but you know how you get into inter-office politics.
Sure,
any sort of business, people don't always have the most clear-eyed view. But yeah, he beat Oklahoma and he beat Florida State at Houston.
Yeah. Okay, most underrated, Bill Snyder, Chris Peterson, David Cutcliffe, Navy's coach. Help me with that last one.
Ken Niumatalolo.
Thank you.
Almost.
By a vowel, Alex. I think Chris Peterson's awesome, and I think the word on him at Boise was the brains behind it all, despite all the guys that left him and got head jobs and lost those head jobs. Peterson's incredible. Bill Snyder, for sure, and you know that. As a Nebraska fan, whether you love or hate the purple, he is incredible, and he's part of that coaching tree that's been proof. Cutcliffe, you know, he was the worst coach in America because he couldn't do anything with Eli. He got Eli because he was great for Peyton as a coordinator, but now he's been pretty good at Duke.
Yeah, and there's a mention for David Beatty at Kansas as well.
He's
one
recruiting
of the
well.
Also receiving votes. So I think what this tells us is that coaches will always respect the guy who's doing a lot with a little.
Yeah.
There's one in Lincoln now.
Surprised to see Riley not make this list as underrated?
Well, not now. He has all the resources he needs.
Nebraska's not an easy job.
No, it's not.
And I think that same peer group, the 52% who chose to participate, would say, like, they loved the opportunity, but they understand it's a nutty job, crazy job.
Riley's probably right behind Snyder if he's still at Oregon State.
I think you're right. Five-pack of soccer tickets, Nebraska soccer for Friday night. A five-pack right now, 466-3776.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
Back with you, it's Hail Varsity Radio, presented by the Nebraska Lottery. Time for a Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center. Dr. Doug Tavis with us. Dr. Doug, how are you, sir?
Doing pretty good. I wish I could throw the ball left-handed and do it all over again. I would have made it all the way up, Chris.
Well, I think I like that, and I have regrets about my early golf career. But I trust you when you say about being a left-handed power pitcher.
Yeah, there you go.
I like it. Andrew Miller is so much fun to watch because his motion's effortless. He's got the pop on his fastball. He's got the slider. And he's a lot like Randy Johnson, just that throw-in motion that I remember. And Andrew Miller's back on the DL, and I remember him being just lights out with Cleveland last year. Was good, a great prospect for the Yanks. And now 10 days, tendonitis in that right knee, Dr. Doug. Let's break this down. And what's your reaction to this injury and the timing of this injury?
Well, if he's on the 10-day disabled list, it doesn't sound like they're, you know, in a situation where they think they're going to lose him for the rest of the season. So that's a plus for the Indians. But, you know, patella
tendonitis is a really tough problem to get rid of, and it's been, you know, it's been a chronic problem for Miller, and to have it crop up right at this point in time is, you know, obviously really worrisome for the whole Indians organization.
You look at patella tendonitis. Kind of explain that to us, if you could. Okay. What is it, and how does it happen?
Yeah, so the patella tendon is the tendon that attaches the kneecap to the leg bone. And when we are growing up and playing a lot of basketball and playing, you know, a lot of jumping sports, there's a lot of people that have what we call jumper's knee. Some people have problems where it attaches onto the leg bone. Some type of people have it on where it attaches to the knee. As we get older, to the kneecap. Mm-hmm. As we get older, it tends to focus on the attachment at the kneecap, and the tendon itself can begin to degenerate, and you can get some partial tearing within the tendon, or just degeneration of the tendon itself, and it just begins to wear out. And so once that happens, we have a difficult time getting that tissue healed up to where it can structurally hold the load that we put on it. So that's why it's very difficult for any sport where you're putting load on that kneecap.
Dr. Doug Tavis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. We're talking Andrew Miller of the Tribe, patella tendonitis, 10-day DL for him, and he's missed a month with this right knee, patellar tendonitis. Dr. Doug, from the rest and kind of the restoration angle, what can you do for Andrew if you're a medical expert? Yeah, you're gonna have the 10 days off, obviously, but long term, because this seems to have cropped up again.
Yeah, so kind of the immediate things that they're going to be doing is anti-inflammatory types of treatment, ultrasound treatments. Ionophoresis is another treatment that the trainers will be doing with them in the training room. That's kind of that immediate treatment option. Might use orally. We might use something like a tapering dose of prednisone to augment that as a way of trying to get that inflammation under control. So once you get past that point and get into the off-season kind of scenario, then we would probably look at it with an MRI scan and see how focal the damage is to that patella tendon. There are times where we would consider going in surgically and excising the damaged part of the tendon and then sewing the good part of the tendon back together. That can be an effective treatment. There are times where we might use an ablation technique where a needle gets placed into the damaged area, ablates that tissue, and then again tries to get scar tissue to form into that spot. So there's a couple of different surgical interventions that can be done. And then this is also a place where we utilize platelet-rich plasma injections with the idea of trying to get some healing response as a result of the platelet-rich plasma.
Couple of thoughts here. The ultrasound treatment, what does that do? And then the PRP, how extra special is that?
Yeah, so the ultrasound treatment is just another one of the things in the trainer's armamentarium to decrease inflammation. That's the goal of it. And so it uses a machine that does pulse ultrasound into the tendon, and we know that under the right frequencies that'll help to decrease inflammation. It isn't going to repair the tendon. If there's structural damage within the tendon, it's not going to repair that. But again, for this immediate time frame of trying to nurse him through the season, that's why you would use the ultrasound. In the long run, if a PRP injection is used, the reason for that is to try to actually stimulate a healing process within the tendon itself. And the studies that have been done on the patella tendon injections have been somewhat mixed, but definitely more than placebo effect. Mm-hmm. In that 60 to 70% range, I've seen significant improvements. I can remember an individual that I did that with that was unable to run. Running recreationally was important to him, couldn't get back to the running, and he's been able to run now. This has been for quite a few years that he's been able to continue running. running. On the other hand, I've used that same treatment with a basketball player who never did get any relief with it. So it's not a panacea, but it's certainly nice to have in the back pocket for treatment.
Andrew Miller is our topic at Jock Doc Wednesday, Lincoln Orthopedic Center, Dr. Doug Tavis, patella tendonitis. Is there anything that Andrew may be asked to do mechanically? Right now, he's just flawless, man. He looks beautiful with the motion, the 95-mile-per-hour fastball, the lefty factor. Can he take some stress off of that kneecap area with a different type of delivery? Is that something that's going to be discussed?
Well, it may be a situation where he feels completely different when he's working out of the windup as opposed to out of the stretch.
Stretch, okay.
And that can be a completely different feeling on that plant leg as you come through. Now, you know, the game of baseball is going to dictate that part of things. But when you think about actually trying to change the mechanics of things, probably not. I'd hate to be the guy that would try and tell him to change.
Right. Hey, Andrew, let me tell you how to do that. No. Dr. Doug Tavis with us, Lincoln Orthopedic Center at Jock Doc Wednesday. Andrew Miller, our topic, and patella tendonitis, 10-day DL for Andrew Miller. Best case scenario, he's back after 10 days. He feels great. It doesn't recur. What's a likely reaction to this 10-day window? Do you think he can ride this out? He's been quoted on ESPN.com. He's aware of the standings and, you know, how tight and how good this AL is this year.
Yeah, I think he's a gamer and he's going to continue to push himself through it. It's just if you're the Indians organization and you see him wince a little bit, you'd probably rather give him that time right now when the Indians are up a few games and give him a chance to do what healing he can so they've got him down the stretch.
Dr. Doug, we'll catch up next week. Thanks for a few minutes.
You bet. Talk to you later, Chris.
And now,
back to Hail Varsity Radio.
We still have a ton of things to give away. We have left it all till the end. Brandon Vogel is in, HailVarsity.com and magazine, at Brandon L. Vogel on Twitter. Schmitty here. And Danny Burke, producing engineering. Big thanks to Eric Crouch today. Big thanks to Brad Edwards today. Thanks to Shuey. Thanks to you, Vogues. Tomorrow on the show, we will run down Gary Barnett. I love Thursdays with Barney. Talk some college football with Barney. Get his take. Also, Johnny the Jet Rogers. Part of Legends Night at Haymarket on Saturday night. And you can log on saltdogs.com/legend. So that's that. Okay, let's do that cue to call for Lincoln Race Course and be caller 10 right now.
You talking about the horse that runs up and down the field every day?
Oh, yes. I've had my eye on that wonderful beast for decades.
I didn't really picture you as a guy who played the pony.
Yes, that beast. All right. Lincoln Race Course. 2 days of live racing, September 8th and 15th. Post times at 6 and 7. Also the mascot race, food and drink specials. $25 gift card now. For details, LincolnRacing.com. Caller 10, 466-3776, 466-3776-800-825-5865. That'll be awesome to go put some heat down. $25 gift card, though, from your friends at the Lincoln Race Course. I got some trivia coming up here, too, in the near future, which will be quite nice. Vogues, what's on the agenda tonight? What do we got going?
I don't know, but there's always plenty of work to do. I might trick you into going to get some barbecue with me. That's been discussed.
Okay.
Yeah, I couldn't play by ear.
No, that is good. And let me tell you what. I mean, the job, the coverage, the content, HailVarsity.com, I'm so excited to be part of it, obviously, and with what's going on with the website. If folks don't know, they can think of the last 2 minutes of today's show and go, now I know. I mean, what's happening with the coverage and the folks we have on there?
Yeah, you know, we've expanded our team, as you mentioned earlier. I think you know, Jacob Padilla, Derek Peterson, Greg
Jacob's
Smith,
awesome.
Been doing a fantastic job. We're putting out more content than I think we ever have in our 5 years in terms of online content. We're hard at work on the next issue of the magazine.
Any hints?
Yeah, a little teaser. It's concerns the greatest what ifs in Husker history.
Wow. You say 7 days of glorious radio.
So
because it was from a writer.
Mike Babcock and I are hashing that out and making some choices there. I think it's going to be fun. I think it's going to be fun from a visual perspective. So that's some of the things.
The what if?
Up. Yeah,
that's so good. All right, but yeah, log on. Jacob Padilla, Brandon Vogel, Greg Smith, Gregers. He'll punch me in the face next time he sees me because I called him Gregers. I have to do that when he's not in studio. And Mike Babcock, man, just to love the team, love the content. Caller 4 and caller 5 right now. We've got a winner for the race course. Caller 4, caller 5. Let's get you hooked up. Let's get you introduced to HaleVarsity.com, a 6-month online subscription. Caller 4, caller 5, 466-3776, 466-3776. Great message board, community insight, opinion on the message boards. Not only that, but just great analysis and info and up-to-the-minute breaking news. Caller 4, caller 5, 466-3776, 800-825-5865. Vogues, thanks. Talk to you tomorrow at 4.